Andrew's motion.
Yeah.
Never know.
Our
presentation goes. You get to be my, this is the maiden voyage of this presentation, that's for sure. I like that. It doesn't matter who I am right now. It only matters what ideas we present this evening. So we're going to get just right to the ideas. And this phrase, the American way of life, has never been defined to my satisfaction. I don't know if you ever thought about it. I hear about it all the while. And it has become a matter or a phrase that arouses disdain more than anything else. I don't know how you have interpreted this phrase or how it's used in our current history, but I want to propose to you that there is something called the American way of life that pertains to every one of us in this room, because it has to do with our nation. It has to do with our nation's life, the life of our nation. Every nation has a personality. Every nation has its own life and its own way of living. So it behooves us as Americans to get a grip, get a handle on some aspects that pertain to us and us alone. So I want to propose to you three ideas that might define us, or shall we say define the American way of life. And I come at this as an historian, or a teacher of history, a reader of history. And so I want to propose to you some ideas for you to consider. It's not in any way a matter of absolute fixed law, but you consider these things and see if these things are so in your experience, in your knowledge, and in your studies. I want to deal with the American way of life, and of course today people are concerned about our way of life, whether or not it will be changed, or simply what is it that they're concerned about. So let me begin with some presuppositions here. And these are the three ideas I'm building upon. I want to propose to you that it's a way of living. A way of life is a way of living. So I believe some of you are living in such a way that fits all three categories, but we're not aware of it, right? I'm telling you how you're living, and you don't even know you're doing it, okay? This is, again, from a broad view of us as a nation, and I'm suggesting to you that the American way of life is individual lives progressing in what I call self-evident truth. Progressing means we're not there yet. None of us have arrived at progress. And this is something that's unfolding. And what is that self-evident truth that pertains to America especially? And that's the idea that all men, this is from the Declaration of Independence, that, and this again is the origin of our nation. This is the idea that gave birth to this nation. So you can't run away from it. You can't deny it, right? Our birth certificate says that our life, this nation's life, began and is built upon this idea that all men, all being without exception and to the exclusion of no man, just in case you don't know what all means. Or men is a generic term for mankind, meaning females too, absolutely, and children, right? Not your pets, okay? Are created. Now, this is troublesome. We're progressing to come to this, are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so not all of us are progressing at the same rate in this idea. And that is, again, at the core, cornerstone of our existence. But this idea, and I'll unfold that as we go further. The second idea, the American way of life, or a way of living, how we are living our lives, is that we are actually, in this country, demonstrating something to the world without even realizing. We're demonstrating the positive alternative or answer to despotism. And when we get there, there are only two kinds of government in history. Only two kinds. Despotism is one of them. Now, what is despotism? It's government by the absolute and arbitrary power of one or of a few. At the Declaration of Independence, identified what America is all about. When a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism. So we are a nation that lives in rejection of despotism. Now that's a new deal. All right? We reject it. It is, and this is what we claim for ourselves. It is their right. It is their right. It is, that's kind of stuttering there, but apologize for that. Just in case you don't get the first time. It is their duty, obligation. They owe it to themselves to throw off such government. And this is not violence. Throw off here doesn't mean it's not physical violence. It is to just put, remove yourself, or throw off such government, and to provide new guards for their future security. So the people will take charge, all right, of their own security. You owe it to yourself. I beg your pardon.
Another Boston Tea Party.
Another?
Like when we removed ourselves from English rule.
Okay. You know, despotism is unlawful. And so they're not submitting to unlawful authority. There are two kinds of authority. I might inject here. Lawful and unlawful. And the Boston Tea Party was simply denying unlawful authority to tax them without being represented. So we just don't go throw off tea. But there's a principle behind it. You understand? What the principle behind it was. It's not just random destruction of tea.
But
it was a legal, demonstration. It was really a legal constitutional act. It was a legal act of a demonstration, which is in the British we call it custom. And the third idea to define the American way of life is this. That individual lives resting, so we are progressing, we are demonstrating in the right sense, or illustrating in our diverse ways, and we are resting. So progressing, demonstrating, and resting, lives resting on their political ability, on our own political savvy, our own political acuteness, to secure our own God-given rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And I define pursuit of happiness here according to the Founding Fathers' understanding of their livelihood. Their livelihood. And we'll unfold that as we go along. When any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people themselves to alter or to abolish it. By the way, when you alter or abolish something, it always has to be better than what you are supplanting. It has to be a superior answer, not inferior, nor to bring upon you a cure worse than the disease itself. And we have to reason. These people knew how to reason themselves out of the paper bag that they were in, okay? I'm on discovery today, if I may make a sidebar note here, that it is very difficult for individuals today, as a product of their education, to get from point A to point B. They have memorized and they have learned by rote many facts and information, but they can't link one idea to another idea. Mm-hmm. It doesn't connect. There is a broken synapse, right? It just doesn't. And so what we have here in 1776 was the people who knew how to get from point A to point B, who knew cause and consequences. Today we act without reasoning what the end result might possibly be. We're not trained to do so. To do that, that's political ability. Otherwise, we're going to face unintended consequences. And they foresaw consequences, and they avoided those consequences they could foresee. And it's a matter of political ability to reason in that sphere of policy. This is what distinguishes the American from all other countries, but they are historically and traditionally. I'm going to unfold it. But it's how we live. It's what we do and what we are striving to accomplish, what we're striving moving toward as a people, as imperfect as we are, acknowledging that we need to progress. We need to but we are in fact a demonstration of some historic phenomena, an anomaly actually, and also that we're putting a dependence not on others, but on ourselves as individuals. If the American way of life is allegedly offensive to her enemies, I come to this conclusion, presumably then, what are they offended by? What is it that causes such pain and injury, all right, to those that have a problem or have a conflict with the way we live? to destroy America, if America is to be undone, then it is also to deny that idea of self-evident truth that all men are created equal. That has to go. That has to be undermined. That has to be trashed. We have to deny every opposition to despotic government. To deny every opposition to despotic government, because that's what we represent. We oppose despotic government first, do we not, in the Declaration. And we also deny the people the ability to govern themselves. We absolutely deny. Deny means to reject the thought, to reject it absolutely. And we recall perhaps in 2001 October, just a month and a half or so after 9/11, I remember his speech here. The object of terrorism is to try to force us to change our way of life. And I wanted him to define our way of life, and it didn't come. And so and that's been sitting back on the back burner since then. And I said, what is our way of life? And so only this week, or last 2 weeks, did I arrive at maybe some answer that I could be satisfied with. Okay, you may not be satisfied with, but I'm a happy camper. So something that satisfies my own soul, that I could put my pocket and say that's it for me. Okay, as an American, first generation American born. So the first idea, we are progressing. I have to progress. I am working to believe this self-evident truth that all men are equal. That I can look at someone that is exactly opposing me in every form, shape, and idea and still say he's my equal. And not look my nose down, whatever nose I have, on him. And say, well, you know, I have got this and you don't have this and so forth. Do you understand? I mean, really believe that that individual is my equal under the same creator. This is easy to say, but not to do. I mean, how deep is my belief in that concept? And by the way, no, not everybody believed this in 1776. In fact, most of the world does not and did not then. Mm-hmm. Look at the idea. It came, first of all, from the old world. America came from somewhere, or we came from the old world, and that would be Asia, Europe, and Africa. Right? That's the old world. From the old world came to America an entrenched idea, and it's deeply entrenched, thousands of years entrenched, that there's a natural inequality among men. It's absolutely so. I mean, let's get it down, right? What do you think? Social order rested on the assumed natural inequality of men, says the historian Framingham. Natural inequality. And you don't have to go too far beyond our borders to say that's so. Yeah. We know that. Females know that. Children know that. A man's worth is established by some social order, and a ranking based upon what? Birth, wealth, power, property, education. I'm putting in there for this season, party. I don't mean the hoo-hoo kind. Okay. But by an order of men comparing themselves with other men. That's what we do all the time. We're always examining each other by each other. All right? And we're comparing ourselves with other men, and therefore we already have a ranking system in our own head.
Yes.
And wanting to fit in somewhere around there, hopefully at the top somewhere. Of at least, and other men, at least worth were the weak, and at least worth in this social order are the weak ones. Whether they're weak in finances, weak in power, weak in force, weak in intellect. And basically, women, children, and the maimed, the poor, etc., were worthless in this social order. And some aren't worth living, having life of their own. Now, we know that's true. True? We have to go far in our neighborhood to say, not everybody believes every life has importance, has its independent worth, has usefulness. Somebody will tell you whether you're useful or not. Some academia is going to tell you whether you're useful or not to live, whether you're fit to live or not.
Yes, it's true.
The fundamental principle of the American way of life is belief. And the people are working on it. We've been struggling with this idea. How deep does this belief go in the individual and in the nation of the independent worth of the individual? We're getting this, a real progress has to do with this idea. Man, first of all, is based on mankind's common humanity in his life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. We have this in common regardless of what grade of life, what history of life we have. So out of the idea, where did this idea come from? Where did this declaration reason from? Flows out of the idea of a common, again, here's the problem, that there's a wise, just, and perfect creator. The one who authored liberty, who does not impose his will on the will of any individual. That's your view of God. Do you believe that there is a creator of such a nature that he will not impose his will on another because he is the author of liberty? That's his idea. But he is able, and besides though, he is able to overrule the decisions of all men. He isn't bothered by our quote unquote bad decisions. It doesn't bother him. They're yours to make. We are made to make our own decisions. And he's not going to violate that. And for that reason, we're all equal in his sight. We have the capacity to make those decisions. Although men are created as rational beings, individuals are liable to be irrational. You think so?
Yeah.
Some of us are irrational sometimes, okay? In thought and action. And civil government is here to punish men who injure the life, liberty, and property of the innocent, which is, again, unreasonable to do. Unreasonable, unprovoked anger, unprovoked offenses. It's irrational, again, to injure those things which are innocent. This is, says Frothingham, the American theory, recognizing human equality and brotherhood, and the individual as the unit of society. Not a class, not an elite, but the individual himself is the basic unit of all society. He's the cornerstone. He's the makeup. It is the individual that we are serving and looking to, not a group of people at all. And so, advancing and promoting the natural equality. Again, we have to deal with our own unbelief or belief. And we have the opportunity in this country to grow in such an idea, to be presented with this proposition that all men are created, and then to struggle in it with ourselves. And it has results. It has results according to our individual progress. And it cannot be imposed. No belief is imposed. But this idea has a chance, has an opportunity to flourish, because there are beneficial results to everybody if this idea could somehow grow, because it could not grow in Asia, and it's still not there, or Europe, or Africa, as much as it is here, because this is the foundation of our thinking, of our way of living, It's a phenomenal thing that men come to this at different stages, and they're not marching to the same beats and come to these ideas except on their own. Except on their own. And it just occurred to me right now, not right now, just being melodramatic, but I thought I would next Sunday, next Wednesday when you come, I would like to do the topic, oh, now I have to do it. Separation of state and religion. Okay? Because that is, we've had the wrong idea, but I want to do that one because I got to get that one off my chest. So, we're here, the way we live as individuals is to, I call it diffuse. And that's the right idea of spreading, okay? But diffuse is spread the idea of the natural equality and individual worth of men and nations. Diffusing or spreading ideas into our world, into this world, living with a very low view of the individual. We are here to advance an idea in a world that does not predominantly believe that all men have worth. And they have a low view of the individual. That's why some of us are here. That's why my parents came. That's why some of your ancestors came. Because they lived under a low view of themselves, of them, right? Others had a low view of them. Mm-hmm. And they were oppressed for it without reason. It was an irrational. And they found here an opportunity to where this idea was growing, is growing, will continue to grow because it's self-evident truth. Trusting in the idea. The American theory provides us with results of a tendency to look not to the past, but to the future. Now, the world was more imperfect than it is today in 1776. Do you understand? The world was more imperfect than it was today. This idea has diffused to 350 million in this country. It was only 3 million then, okay? We have grown in this idea for 200 years. It was a new idea to Earth. And it is being wafted, I think, across the oceans and seas, little by little. It is truth, and it's going to go very gradually. And it can't be done by force, but it's leaking, it's going out. And it's embracing more and more of the Earth than it did in 1776. They were imperfect. This idea had not grown. Only one third of those people truly held to separation and independence. One third, 1 million only of 3 million. And yet it was sufficient to effect a nation such as ours. So they knew they didn't have, those who established this didn't have, will not see in their lifetime the perfection of this idea. They look to the next generation, that it might begin with them and progress forward with all the struggles that it would entail, with all the hiccups and bumps and squeaks that it takes to advance such an idea when it is not believed. When a creator is not believed in, when a creator who is wise, just, and perfect is not believed in, when the equality of men, women, and children are not believed in, and yet it's growing, progressing, in spite of it, not without struggle. For types of perfection that was brought into the world by Christianity. These are Christian ideas, and just hang on to that for a minute. To maintain such a theory, we fought the battles of the revolution. To build on it a worthy superstructure of government and law. Something says we didn't have a national government, and we're going to build a constitution that will reflect this idea. It's incredible. We would structure our political system so that this idea would be advanced and not hindered. Should men believe in it? Should men believe in it? It provided for the results of a tendency to look not to the past but to the future for the types of perfection. That's kind of redundant there, isn't it? Next idea. We are united people pledged to maintaining a political system which guarantees individual liberty to a greater degree than any other. And that's 1981. Time enough has passed from 1776, 1787 to 1981. short of the anniversary of our Constitution. And we can look back and say it is true that this country provides the greatest individual liberty the world mankind has ever seen. The greatest mankind has ever seen. And so, does this idea work? It again blesses all men. It blesses every. And this truth or this belief in it must advance, must continue to even advance within our own nation still. Within our own nation still. And we're being challenged. We're being challenged still with these ideas. It will continue to be a challenge. Now, what's convincing? We are convincing many nations of the independent worth of the individual through his individual enterprise. The visual, the tangible proof of exercising this idea is in the prosperity of the individual. The material manifestation, there's a material, not only political, but a material manifestation of this idea that he gets to enjoy the fruits of his own labor without confiscation, without robbery, but enjoying the fruits of his own labor as the means of his own livelihood. Not that, and this is the key to pursuit of happiness. His own individual enterprise. As a nation, we began as a communist people in 1620. Storehousing. We learned early that it didn't work for us. It didn't work for any humanity. And they threw it over. They overthrew it. They threw it off of them and went to individual enterprise. America's affluence is because of not corporate enterprise, but individual enterprise. That's the worth of individual productivity. It's a proof of the pudding of this idea, of the independent worth. And if you go to business magazines and history, you'll see this in economics. Individual enterprise is the foundation of American affluence. Absolutely, we're the richest nation in the world because of individual enterprise, not because of the nasty corporations. They make only 20% of our economy. But the reason statistics is that middle class workers hired by small business, what's an individual enterprise? It's simply a family trying to take care of itself. And lo and behold, as a family endeavors to take care of its own needs and its own supply and provide for itself, it blesses others. Inadvertently, without even intending to, because it's a natural prosperity that comes from his own productivity. There is no prosperity without productivity. You take away productivity, you have nothing to spread around. So what encourages productivity? 75%. You know, if we talk about middle-class workers, that's the largest number. But they're workers, that means they're hired by somebody. And 75% of this class of workers are hired by small businessmen and women. That's phenomenal. Americans have always believed they live in a land of opportunity where anybody who has a good idea, anybody, that's an individual, determination and a willingness to work hard, can start a business and prosper because he's willing to be productive and work. In practice, this belief in entrepreneurship has taken away many parts. I'll say it again. America is not a capitalist nation. Now, you need capital to start a business, but America is built on individual enterprise. She's entrepreneurial, not capitalist. Capitalist is European, but it is not to be applied to America. And if we do that, we're going to go down the road to something else. Okay, I'll name it. Entrepreneur has taken many forms, from the self-employed individual to the global conglomerates. Now, Watch this. In the 17th and 18th centuries, the public extolled the pioneer who overcame great hardships to carve a home and a way of life out of the wilderness. In 19th century America, as small agricultural enterprises rapidly spread across the vast expanse of the American frontier, the homesteading farmer embodied many of the ideals of the economic individualist. But as the nation's population grew and cities assumed increased economic importance, the dream of being in business for oneself evolved to include small merchants, independent craftsmen, and self-reliant professionals as well. In the 20th century, continuing a trend that began the latter part of the 19th century, brought an enormous leap in the scale and complexity of economic activity. In many industries, small enterprises had trouble raising sufficient funds and operating on a large scale enough to produce most efficiently all of the goods demanded by an increasingly sophisticated and affluent population. So in the 20th century, we do have, because of the difficulty of acquiring capital as a small businessman, we did have corporations. Large was okay in the 20th century, or the beginning of the 20th century. But corporations began to diminish as we began to see the rise. The modern corporation, often employing hundreds or even thousands of workers, assumed increased importance. And that's where we have corporations hiring thousands, tens of thousands of employees, and they depended on the corporation. But things began to change. Today, the American economy boasts a wide array of enterprises, ranging from one person. See, with prosperity came the ability to raise capital for small business. Ranging from one person sole proprietorships to some of the world's largest corporations. In 1995, there were 16.4 million non-farm sole proprietorships, 1.6 million partnerships, and 4.5 million corporations in the United States. They totaled 22.5 million independent enterprises. Many visitors from abroad are surprised to learn that even today, the U.S. economy is by no means dominated by giant corporations. That's a fallacious thought. It's a fallacy. And when you're taxing business, you're taxing those that hire the most workers in the union, in the country. And in order to keep their overheads low, they have to minimize and cut down their costs, especially in employment. It's just natural. It is just economics. Fully 99% of all independent enterprises in the country employ fewer than 500 people. These small enterprises account for 52% of all U.S. workers, according to the U.S. Small Business Administration. So, go on to the next page. Small businesses are a continuing source of dynamism for the American economy. They produced three-fourths of the economy's new jobs between 1990 and 1995. And so we can see how important the small business is. Again, it's individual enterprise, not capitalism. It's not corporate profits that we're looking for, but it's the productivity of the small businessman. And there's versatility in small business. They are able to respond quickly to changing economic conditions. They know their customers personally and are especially suited to meet local needs. Very important word, local needs. And again, their sphere of operation is the local. Source of technical innovation. We know about Microsoft. The Canon at college was at dorm room practically. Gates was in college and he realized he didn't need it anymore because he had Microsoft, okay? And we have Federal Express, same way, Nike, American Online, Ben and Jerry's began in the garages or kitchens of our own homes. That's individual enterprise. And that is evidence of the independent worth of the individual. What comes out of one business, you can hire 500 workers. The importance of one. And you can't punish that. You can't punish that. Every one of us knows that our economy is changing more and more, it is being driven by what small business and entrepreneurial activity. And this has been a very wonderful window and doorway for women to also enter the marketplace because of individual enterprise. And the internet will show you that. eBay will show you that. All of this opportunity. Because we recognize what one can produce. The nature of employment is changing dramatically as well, spawned by a huge shift toward what? Self-employment. or people who are enterprising, contracting and consulting. And this again is very current, 2004. So this is the idea of the progress we are making about the natural equality of all in society, not just the few. And that's manifested economically. Next idea, we are demonstrating to the world the positive alternative to despotism. And in history, you could divide all government into two kinds, either despotic government or self-government. That's only two. At the formation of our government, says Jefferson, many have formed their political opinions on European writings and practices. As much as we respect the place Europe played in history, we are not another Europe. Remember this, we are not another Europe. Believing the experiences of old countries, and especially of England, abusive as it was, to be a safer guide than mere theory. The doctrines of Europe were that men in numerous associations cannot be restrained with the limits of order and justice, but by forces physical and moral, wielded over them by authorities independent of their will. In other words, you must be under the will of a superior. You of your own accord cannot do, cannot know. Well, when you have a society of peasants, probably not, okay? Society of serfs, no, not ready. Or slaves, not ready. Hence, their organization of kings, hereditary nobles, and priests. That's their organization. But that's not America's organization. We are different because our government and our way of life are not based on the divine right of kings, which means a man is above the law, one man being above the law. The hereditary privileges of elites or the enforcement of deference to dictators, they are based on pieces of paper. Really, our nation hangs on two pieces of paper, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States, and this gentleman as the Bill of Rights that established our liberties. That's all that regulate our lives, these documents. This is a statement by Mr. Carlin, the National Archivist, in 1999. Now, this way of living is American, and it's new. It is new to history. And it's a people living in self-government, managing their own lives, thinking for themselves. What a phenomenon. People actually making decisions for themselves, not needing a father, a paternal government, to tell them how to be and where to go and how to think. We, the people of the United States. You see, the rulers are the people, not the lawmakers and not the president. We ordain. We set this up for ourselves, to establish this Constitution for all the states of America. We are a representative republic. That is, the rulers are elected to serve the will of the people. But the people do not serve the will of their rulers. That's a new deal. Isn't that a new idea? We are a nation that has a government, not the other way around. And this makes us special among the nations of the earth. Special meaning unique. Our government has no power except that it granted by the people. That means we have a job to do. That means we, the people, do not live like other people in other nations. We have to know what we're doing.
Right.
For ourselves. And everything that we have in the way of rulers comes from us anyway. And so it's the most just exchange and idea here. It is time to check and reverse the growth of government, which shows signs of having grown beyond the consent of the governed. All of us, they rule us because we consent to them by our vote. Our vote is a consent. That is property. Your consent is your property. It's the most valuable political capital you have. And all of us need to be reminded that the federal government did not create the states. The states created the federal government. And that's very important to remember when we think about, again, how we live. The equal rights of man and the happiness of every individual are now acknowledged to be the only legitimate objects of government. Modern times, having discovered the only device by which these rights can be secured. And the device that modern man discovered, this is modern in 1823, all right? The most modern invention of America is the Constitution of the United States. Political invention. It's a political innovation. History sort of climaxes at this institution called America's form of government, self-government. This constitution, it's new. It is the positive answer to despotism. It was designed to check despotism. It was designed to prevent it, if at all possible. It is to put government on the people themselves, not on a king, not on an assembly, not on a Congress. Congress is not to do anything beyond the will of the elector. And so every man of right ear, of course, represented, chosen by themselves. This is a phenomenon we must not take for granted. If men were angels, says James Madison, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls of government would be necessary. A government which is to be administered by men over men, you have to first enable the government to control the governed and oblige it to control itself. So what we see here is that in the Constitution, we have written in how the rulers can control themselves, or how to check themselves. It's check and balance that we have in the Constitution. Unlimited power is apt to corrupt. And who has oversight of the rulers? By the way, we hear a lot about oversight lately, right?
Yes.
No oversight here. You know, we're supposed to have oversight. And where we're supposed to oversee the representatives, we haven't been doing our job. We have not been overseeing the people we have put there to represent us. And they have run amok. All right? And that's where their oversight has to be. Not them overseeing us. We overseeing them. Right? But we've lost the know-how. Somehow. Okay. How? Free government is founded in jealousy, not confidence. We have to be jealous of our liberty. We have to be jealous of our own lives, our own property, our own businesses. Jealous means zealous. It doesn't mean anything negative. It's a good idea. You need to be zealous about your own being, your own worth, your own opinions, your own property, your own will. Keep it. Nobody wants it. Keep it. All right? You keep it. Safe and secure. It is jealousy and that confidence which prescribes limited constitutions to bind those who are obliged to trust. If we trust them, we have to bind them. In questions of power, then let no more be heard of confidence and then to bind them down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. James Madison, an elective despotism was not the government we fought for. Looks like we are. It's as if we have 100 kings over us. No names mentioned. Just 100 of them. But one in which the powers of government should be so divided and balanced. And the thing is, they have crossed the lines. They have not stayed within the bounds of the Constitution. And we have not held them accountable for it. We're to blame for the condition of our nation. We, the people. It's not trickle-down blame. It starts right where we are. It really is. It's painful to look at. Can we, again, defy the law of gravity and not crash and burn? We think we can until 2 weeks ago. No one could transcend their legal limits. They have, every one of them, without being effectually checked and restrained by the others. And so that's how it was set up. Now, that's what we were saying. Congress, we the people have the supreme power. Poor Bush. He's taken a whipping. And there are some things he has done that have just caused me concern. Definitely. But you know what? He can't be blamed for what Congress did. Congress has charge of all the domestic policies. Do you understand that? He has charge of our foreign policies. But what's happening inside of this country, even the weather, all right, is Congress's fault. Not Bush, okay? We didn't let them take charge of the weather. Just Congress takes charge of the weather. That's the law-making body, the body which taxes. And also, it's the body that regulates banks. It came from there. Directs the domestic policy of the United States. And we're hurting. look at the clauses in Article 1. The House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states. They only have 2 years term of office. Hint, hint. All right? Some need to be fired, okay? I don't mean literally. Okay. And the electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite of for electors, etc. The Senate shall be, they have 6 year term. They used to be chosen by the legislatures, now they are popular vote, but that's the original idea. All bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. Everything that we've seen go across the desk of the president to sign has been originated by Congress. And our next executive either will veto or will sign the bills. And it's up to you. Do you want more taxation signed or do you want it vetoed? That's a decision you have to make. And what will it mean? What will it mean to the economy at this low level of productivity? What will increase productivity? What will decrease it? Those who do work are denied a fair return for their labor by a tax system. This is, in 1981, Ronald Reagan's first inaugural address, and this was coming out of the Carter administration. And some of you may not remember that, some of you may not have been born yet. Nevertheless, you weren't paying taxes then, either. But a tax system which penalizes successful achievement and keeps us from maintaining full productivity. We need to be productive now more than ever. We've got debt up to our kazoo, all right? And it'll go for years. I think the only way, you know, the $700 billion plus, $850 billion actually, now they've tacked on a couple of hundred more billion dollars. It's been easy. Once you spend $850 billion, I guess another $700 billion isn't anything, right? Why not? It's just go for broke.
Yeah.
Right? Absolutely. And we're going to pay for it. And you know what? We're just willing to do it. But it could be taken care of. And I have a solution, but we won't go there, okay? You won't like the solution. For decades, we have piled deficit. You know what? We have lived in deficit spending individually. If we were truthful, for the last 30 years, we have lived not within our means.
Right.
We have charged and charged. They send credit cards to high school students nowadays, I think. I'm being facetious a little bit. But they can't lure you to do something that you're not supposed to do. Do you know that? It's not the banks that are at fault. It's we who have the disposition to not live within our means and to lie on loan applications and to fall into temptation, as it were. We're weak, and we've lived in debt for so long. This balloon has had to pop. Mortgaging our future and our children's future for the temporary convenience. Now we're going to have to get down to just cash flow. We're going to have to pay everything by cash. We're going to ever get out of this hole, which means stores will have to close. You have to cook at home. Okay. And no more lattes. No more lattes. I mean, you think about it. We've been spinning like a drunken sailor. Okay? Actually, because... No, and by the way, there's good debt. This is being recorded. There's good debt and bad debt. All right? There's good debt and bad debt. But you have to understand that much of what we're in today is because of bad debt. To continue this long trend is to guarantee tremendous social, cultural, political, and economic upheavals. Here we are. You and I, as individuals, can by borrowing live beyond our means. But for only a limited period of time. Why then should we think that collectively, as a nation, we're not bound by that same limitation? We're going to have to hold our congressmen and our assemblymen, both in the state level and the national level, to live within their means.
Amen.
Bobby Jindal. I love Bobby Jindal. Remember Bobby Jindal? He told his assemblymen, you live within your means. You will only get a $50 lunch. Louisiana. Watch it. He got A+. I'm diverting here, but he got A+ rating for the Gustav He was supposed to speak at the Republican convention, but he stayed in Louisiana as a result. But watch out for Bobby Jindal, okay? It can happen. Now, this next up and down thing, I read the quote by Reagan, and I'd like to illustrate what we're looking at here. Remember, we are demonstrating the positive alternative to despotism, to slavery.
Okay.
Slavery is the lowest human existence. It could be in your home, but still the lowest existence. And that means, why is it so low? Because you are serving the will of another against your will, when you have no will of your own. And you and I are told we must choose between the left or right. And I don't like this thing. It's not between what party you are. Just get off of that party thing. Party affiliation has nothing to do with it. But I suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There is only an up or down. Up to man's old dream, the maxim of individual freedom consistent with order, or down to the ant heap of totalitarianism. Regardless of their sincerity, their humanitarian motives, those who have sacrificed freedom for security have embarked on this downward path. Two-part war, the real destroyer of the liberties of the people is he who spreads among them bounties, donations, and benefits. Dependency. If you're incurring dependency for your livelihood, if you are depending upon the fruits of somebody else's labor, then you are dependent on somebody else. That's basically it. It's not that we would not wish to give a helping hand. But we do not want to incur dependency or slavery on another. You're making somebody a slave to you.
That's right.
We have not gone very far from the Civil War, if that's the case. It just comes in a different form. So what is good for America is what promotes liberty for the individual, in principle. And it may hurt a little bit. It may be not be popular. You know, some things you look like, it may seem you're against something when you're really for it, because you have to vote against it.
Oh no.
But you get the point. The last idea. The last thing we are doing, how we live. We are resting on our own ability, our own political acuteness, our own ability, political ability. The qualifications for self-government in society are not innate. You're not born with this ability, by the way. We're born with a disability.
That's right.
No ability for self-government.
Right.
It doesn't come with drinking the right kind of water, either. They are the result of habit and long training. And it is remarkable to see 200 years before the Declaration of Independence. It was a habit of theirs because England was so remote, 3,000 miles of water remote, that they had to fall back on themselves for their own care. It's amazing. Fall back on yourself for your own care. That's a hard thing to do when there's nothing around to use. All have, for many generations, been more or less accustomed. They were accustomed to self-government and to public meetings for discussing local affairs. This is why all I want is the law. It's a beginning of what they used to do a lot of. This used to happen and occur constantly in their towns, in their society, to have gatherings of such to discuss the current policies that they're under or that is being produced. And this custom is, and we've lost that custom. Within its proper sphere, governed by town meeting is the form of government most effectively under watch and control. You can see locally, and it is more transparent to observe and keep oversight of the local rulers. And that's where we need to begin. That's where they did begin, when they could watch and observe what happened locally among themselves from those of themselves, then they could reason into the next sphere, into the larger spheres. And that's the idea. Anyone who disapproves of any of these objects or the way in which it is proposed to obtain has an opportunity to declare his opinions. We don't even know how to articulate an opinion. We don't even have an opinion to articulate. Help us, Lord. Help us. Okay. This opinion comes, all right, through exercise, through training. We've not been trained to do this. It's not that we're apathetic, we're just stupid. We're dumb. Okay, D-U-M-B, because we are D-U-M-B. Okay. I refer especially to the delusion that the government is a sort of mysterious power. See, we think of it some hard thing out there when it's most immediate. If we know how to do the immediate, it is not so hard out there. A sort of mysterious power possessed of a magic, inexhaustible fund of wealth and able to do all manner of things for the benefit of the people. Some such notion as this, more often implied than expressed, is very common, and it still is, and it is inexpressibly dear to demagogues. It is the prolific root from which springs that luxuriant crop of humbug upon which political tricksters thrive as pigs fatten upon corn. In point of fact, no such government armed with a magic fund of its own has ever existed upon the earth. No government has ever yet used any money for public purposes which it did not first take from its own people, unless when it may have plundered it from some other people in victorious warfare. We just want to follow the money. Our money, outspent, right? The inhabitant is kept pretty close to the facts where local affairs are concerned. And in this, there's a political trend of no small value. We're not politically trained. We used to be politically trained. We need to be. We need to reason politically, or I call it reason governmentally. And they are basic to all, whether we are on the left or right. There are principles. There are principles of good policy. And we want to remind ourselves that bad people can make good policy, and good people can make bad policy. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I said it twice. Okay.
Yeah. Is this Jefferson's words, or is this Frothingham's words on Jefferson?
Which one? This is Frothingham.
What are you reading?
This is all Frothingham.
Frothingham,
yeah. In the kind of discussion which it provokes, the necessity of facing argument with argument and keeping one's temper under control. That's wonderful training, isn't it? That's part of political training.
Yeah.
The town meeting is the best political training school in existence. And again, we need to be, in those days, the period of earnest and sometimes stormy discussion that ushered in a revolutionary war. Our revolutionary war did not come as an explosion. It came over 10 years of debate. After 10 years of debate among 13 separate colonies, until they could not come to any other conclusion that independence was their only hope from slavery, from tyranny. In those days, great principles of government were discussed. We need to discuss those principles of government again. With a wealth of knowledge and state with masterly skill in town meeting, do we have that? Do we have that? We base all our experience on the capacity of mankind for self-government, James Madison. And so we gave the power, we delegate to representatives. And they're specific. They go with specific job descriptions. That's all that is. And we divide it so that we could keep the state separate from the nation. There's what the nation does, which is very general and minimal. And we keep the rest for ourselves. We keep our internal business to ourselves. We mind our own business. And we don't let anybody else mind our own business.
Okay.
It's none of their business. That's why. It's not their business. Next page. Sometimes it is said that man cannot be trusted with the government of himself. Can he then be trusted with the government of others? Or have we found angels in the form of kings to govern him? Let history answer this question. Wonderful Thomas Jefferson quote. In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. From time to time, we've been tempted to believe that society has become too complex to be managed by self-rule, that government by an elite group is superior to government for, by, and of the people. But if no one among us is capable of governing himself, then who among us has the capacity to govern someone else? That's another twist on Thomas Jefferson's quote by Reagan. And Reagan, I understand this. And he also said, I want to make a point with this quote. The orderly transfer of authority as called for in the Constitution routinely takes place, as it has for almost two centuries, and few of us stop to think how unique we really are. In the eyes of many in the world, this every four-year ceremony we accept as normal is nothing less than a miracle. Why is the presidency not as significant as it is in other nations? Because we care
for the government closest to home. We have a structure that is a cushion against tyranny. We're confident. We are secure in the way we've been set up so that no president can come in and become a king or dictator without breaking down the structure. This is my next point. We have a protection. And what is it? The power is in Congress, not in the presidency. Remember that. In America, we are identified, and you think about this, how do you define yourself, identify yourself? More by our political sphere of influence than by our social rank. More by his town, city, county, and state affiliation than by our station in society determined by birth, wealth, or education. Within each political sphere, there will be found the rich, the middle income, and poor. These are relative in each locality, are they not? Mm-hmm. But there's also mobility within those categories. You could have $1 million one day, and tomorrow it is gone. We saw that, right? $2 trillion, all right? Gone. The market goes up and down. And there's a great deal of mobility because we are not set in any particular class, income class. The excesses, and this is very important. Some people don't like America because of our excesses. But what have we learned about excesses? And what we're about to learn very shortly. The excesses of affluence, that is inordinate consumption, political corruption, gluttony, greed, etc., they judge and destroy themselves. We don't have to worry about them.
Yeah, that's right.
You try to live a lifestyle of inordinate consumption and political corruption. People go to court all the time for political corruption, don't they?
Yeah.
Gluttony, greed, and you know what? What are we witnessing in this country? They judge themselves. It's self-destroying. Don't worry for things that are self-destructive. You don't have to bark at it. You don't have to shout at it. You don't even have to shoot it. It will self-destruct. Let it self-destruct. You cannot. It is the good will continue. America is structured to solve our problems. See, we are not identified by our party affiliation, by our family affiliation, but by our locality, where we reside, actually, our sphere of political influence. America is structured to solve the problems how? Beginning at the local level. So if this president doesn't work, we can change it at the local level. Do you understand? We are, I believe, what is it called? Insulated by our local spheres. And we can, again, we have the power of electing our rulers in Congress. In this present, we read this already, are you willing, this is the challenge, are you willing to spend time studying issues? Right, you all have your ballots, right?
Yes.
It's a lot of legalese, isn't it?
Lots.
Yeah. Making yourself aware, and begin, by the way, one way of doing that is begin earlier, but before the night before, before November 3rd, do your homework. I started as early as they started 2 years ago, right? The primary. This is about your country. These are about, you need to follow whatever, when they start is when you start. Because you're not going to catch it all. And it takes time for you to think about things. You have to be thinking very well November 3rd about how you're going to vote November 4th. You haven't resolved anything. You're gonna eeny, meeny, mighty, moe. It. Right?
No.
And so we get our leaders by eeny, meeny, mighty, moe. Oh, I like his name. It sounds good. I can't read all this. Ah, it doesn't matter. Okay. So are you willing to spend time studying the policies, making yourself aware, and then conveying that information to family and friends? Will you resist the temptation to get a government handout for your community? It's very important because that's our insulation. Mm-hmm. It's when we say, no thank you.
Yeah.
We'll build it ourselves.
Yeah.
We'll take care of our own poor.
Yeah.
We'll get together and we'll rebuild ourselves. We may be a national, we may be called a disaster, we may have, but we're not going to take those funds.
That's right.
Realize that the doctor's fight against socialized medicine is your fight. We can't socialize the doctors without socializing the patients. Mm-hmm. Recognize that government invasion of public power is essentially an assault upon your own business. If some among you fear taking a stand because you're afraid of reprisals from customers, clients, or even the government, recognize that you're just feeding the crocodile, hoping he'll eat you last.
Mm-hmm.
That's humorous. that's the Irish
warning.
Of Reagan. But he has a way. But I like this one. I like this one. I can understand this one. All great change in America begins at the dinner table. We have four dinner tables.
Okay.
Because it's about thinking, resolving, and determination. To destroy the American way of life, how are we going to have to destroy? How is it destroyed? You must deny your own individual independence. If they can, through education, get you to deny your importance, that you're nothing and nobody, that you're not worth much, you can't do much, they've won almost half the battle right there. His own property, that you have independent worth in your own property of what? First, your conscience, your intellect, your will, your talent, your opinions, no matter what gender, no matter what handicaps, no matter what history you may have. The American must deny his responsibility for the quality of civil government in which he lives. We have neglected that as a result. So, but this can be restored. I mean, it's like the stock market. We have our ups and downs, but it's forward pressing. America's way of life is fueled by individual liberty, not oil. Okay? It's not the oil we're addicted to. It's liberty that we are addicted to. We can't live without it. We must have our liberty. And remember how this country was started. America, today, the envy of the world, began with individuals with nothing more than their liberty. And that's true for some of us first generation born Americans. Parents who came with nothing on their but the clothes on their backs. Amazing story. It's so immediate to me. I don't know how it is immediate in your family. Nothing but freedom. For my mother, it's freedom from her mother-in-law. That's all it took. That's all it took. And it changed my life. You see? We just need a little bit. And it goes a long way, as we already done. Living, and then they came with nothing because they were deposited on a wilderness with nothing. Nothing. Living in seemingly God-forsaken wilderness, and look at America today, because they came looking for liberty and made sure others had it too. They imposed their church doctrines on anyone. On anyone. That's not Christianity. Liberty is our breath of life. Okay? Thank you. Now, so maybe this will help you a little bit after the election.
A lot.
I'm totally.
Thank you.